Oh, Paul, we've got Paul on today. Paul Bunce, it's such a pleasure to have you on. So you are the founder of the Wildman program, and your kind of motto is be wild, live free, and be loving. And I think that's like, to me, you're just like a real life Jason Steadman, you know, like an actual superhero and warrior. And it sounds cheesy, but it's so true. So I want to welcome you on. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thank you for welcoming in. And I think I'm a human. But I have been exploring like deep level of consciousness. I wanted to kind of find out who am I? Who is this human behind this skin? And I had a transformational process actually in my 20s when I was called into a leadership seminar. And then I didn't feel as a leader. I didn't feel like that I was confident. I felt like really I was out of my comfort zone, and I just wanted to hide in my room and be there because everybody else was so much better than me. So, but then there would come one woman came in and spoke, and she's asked some good questions. And is it true that it's like, is it true that Paul is not funny? Is it true that I can't speak in front of an audience? So it's like some deep inquiries. And she asked us to look deeper inside of us instead of the programming we are conditioned with. And it ended the last day. I stood in front of 30 people and I was singing in front of them, and I was really showing my happiness and joy. And then that kickstarted my journey, and I got a taste of what's inside of me. And that is more like a superpower inside of each one of us. It's just waiting for us to be found. And that's what I mean with a little bit be wild, daring to go in there and find who you truly are, and there is power to be found there.
I love that. Just getting your first taste of what it means to be alive, what it means to be a human. That's powerful. How old do you say you were? You're a teenager, did you say?
I
20.
was 23 at that time.
23. Awesome. And I think a lot of people can relate to that as well, just kind of feeling shy and not wanting to put themselves out there. And just the humanity sort of conditioning that's kind of, put upon us. The moment we're born, we're being conditioned. So yes, wow, that's just, and I guess you've had such a powerful, journey since then. What were some more kind of, what really kick-started your, I mean, that was the first kind of piece, but after then, is there more kind of pieces that kick-started your kind of spiritual warrior sort of, being that you are now?
Yeah, or it kick started there, and then I was like, okay, I wanted to read and find books. So for the first time, it was like I've been studying in marketing and economics, but I was more like doing it. And also at school, I was pretty good, but not superb. But I was like, but I just read it because everybody else thought I'm gonna read these books. But when I just found that spark, I was like, okay, how can I have more of this? So I started to read like personal development books, and that was, and then I went into some healing and meditation, and then I went into NLP, so neuro-linguistic programming, so how to reprogram the brain and the mind and facing emotions and going from like what I said, like I'm not good enough, there's something wrong with me, to a more resourceful places where, okay, yeah, I can sing, I can do it. And it's like more of this personal power. So I was starting to study Anthony Robbins. I was full on with him, and like, yeah. So I was there for couple of years. So
that's powerful. I think a lot of like personal development people as well, I think it's quite easy for them to get stuck in like the personal development kind of world, because once you kind of put your finger on like the rabbit hole, you know, it's like a whole new kind of world opens up. So I mean, I'm speaking from experience, but I kind of felt a bit like a bit lost in the whole personal development world. Like even in that world, there's just like there's conditioning. There's like these like gurus, you know, that I mean they're great. They're great people that, you know, we look up to. But it's as you say, Paul, it's personal power. It's tapping into your own, you know, uniqueness, your own like personal genius.
Definitely. But my problem was like after a while, I studied. I'm kind of going full in when I do, and I studied quite intensely, and then I remember I was then starting to assist at NLP trainings, and I felt like, my body wants to express something different.
Mm.
It's something with going from pain to pleasure. We are still operating in the field of the ego. and I studying marketing and economics, and I felt some of what the problems we are facing in the world is just this chase of being successful. So I want success. I need more money. I need more beautiful women. And that. So suddenly I felt like, no, I don't, there is something wrong here.
Mm.
And I went to my teacher, and I, from my own being, there came like a technique how to dive deeper in. And I said like, I can't buy this, the way you are doing this anymore. This is not right according to my body and my knowledge.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of fear of daring to speak up again. Speak up like, okay, do I dare to face my teacher? And she didn't took it that very well. So I had to move on. I had to be true to something deeper. I didn't fully know what it was.
Mm.
But I am more than my failure and my success.
Mm.
There is something else which is waiting for me, and like I needed to dive deeper. So I started to develop this technique of going deeper into the body and more fully acknowledge my emotion. I believe also NLP has developed the last 20 years as well. So but it was very, the founders was very mindy and very focused on success. And Anthony Robbins at that time, he has also developed during his years and found. So he's amazing. He's an amazing teacher and he has a lot of amazing things. But at that time I felt like, okay, I want to go deeper.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually, it came out a book called The Journey, which is Brandon Bay's book. And she just had the same technique which I had, but just more, it was better. She has worked through it for many years, been reading the book. Mm-hmm. So I started to study that. And then there was an easy possible way to go beyond or step into the emotion and drop through the emotional levels.
Mm-hmm.
And there, kind of almost coming into a black hole and where most therapies doesn't dare to go, and most of, we are afraid of dying essentially. Okay. And kind of ego dissolving.
Mm.
So it was like, but that technique was very powerful to kind of daring to guide us in there and hold a safe space for that transformational process and going into the source, to the essence, to the silence of who I am. And from there, going up and cleaning out old childhood beliefs and things we had with our mothers, fathers, siblings, and coming back into a more resourceful, but more a relaxed place, more like an emptiness. I can be powerful, but I don't need is I'm not so focused on this only on the success.
I mean, you're a man who's gone extremely deep, like soul level, I guess. I fully respect that, because a lot of people, you know, myself included, are, you know, it's scary to face the darkness, to face yourself, you know. So from your perspective, what's the kind of what's the benefit of being in the darkness for your life's purpose?
Beautiful question. I want to go a little bit back then, because I was playing football. I was pretty good. I played in second division when I was, I can be proud. I played against Tottenham Hotspur as well, and we actually beat them in the summer game at that time.
What was the team called?
Ski, or follow, it's now she. S-K-K-E. So it was, so I was fully dedicated to football, and I really loved to play it, and I still love it to watch games, and I'm still fascinated how amazing that game is. And back to the wild man again, it was an arena where it's allowed for men to be men and full power and can step into. So I actually could use some of that, my new journey onto the football field as well, of daring to face whatever I need to face. But my point was, like, even though I played pretty second division, I felt like, even though how good I was, I felt like there is always something I'm not happy with. If I played one ball or two balls, it's like I played a bad game, it was like, I was so ups and downs. So I was kind of craving for that success. And it's almost like I was never good enough. It was good in one way to drive me further, but it was, I am empty in my heart. I feel empty inside.
Yeah.
I feel lonely. And I feel like a lot in my peers with the football team was like, it's shitty conversation we have. It's like, it's very superficial.
Disconnected,
masculine. And I felt very, especially when I started in my personal development, I felt like, I feel weaker when I'm here. I don't feel good, and just go out and drinking and going for women. And I was like, this is empty. So it's like, and that was for me. So it can be really bad for your personal development or for your career as well. And it was for me, to be honest with you, because I felt like, okay, my marketing education and I saw, like, the whole capitalism most is based on greed. And I saw, like, in the future, I felt like, and this is 20 years ago or 25 years ago, and it was like, if we continue like this, the environmental crisis will come. We will have bigger differences between rich and the poor. There will be a threat to democracy. So I wrote like a thesis that we need to go through a paradigm shift.
Yes.
And that's what I feel like we are just in the middle of now. Now we're starting to fully see the limitation of our old way of thinking.
Yes. So
our health industry is fucked. Our economy is pretty fucked most around. So all of these problems are really starting to come to surface. But I saw this 20 years ago and I was like, fuck, what can I do? And I felt, I don't know what to do with it. I am powerless with these big forces, and we can still feel that during these times. So what should I do? And I was like, and I must say, then I was going into almost like a small depression, and like, can I trust what I'm on? Who am I to say these things, big things, or around economy? And it's like, and then Yeah, but life, and that's how I feel, like life has a way, if we're daring to face our darkness and our problems and are honest with money, with everything, and trying to be as honest and sincere and truthful, life gives us an opportunity.
Mm,
so suddenly I went to Finnhorn at that time. place in Scotland, which maybe some of you know. And wow. I came back, and it was more popular a long time ago. And I came back, and suddenly a journalist was kind of finding interest in my story, and that I had been in Finnhorn, and a guy who is studying economics and is interested in spirituality. Where is that link? So yeah, he had an interview, and long story short, suddenly he brought me to India, and I was on my way to make a documentary from a prison in India around meditation and yoga and stuff. So by facing that, but I couldn't expect it. I couldn't know that was happening, but it was like, okay, life took me there. And I've been making documentaries, so that made a new profession. But it was like a little bit luck of life, but that's a little bit the hero's journey, which we're taking. So it's like you need to let go of everything in order to come on the other side. And then suddenly life is giving you a gift. This friendship with this man, Øystein, was amazing. He took me out into the world, and he was like a wild man for me. He brought me into the big arenas and to famous people and big names. And I could...
This was the Indian adventure.
Yeah, I met India's most admired woman. So she was... she's a really big, big heart, and has transformed the prisons in India, and changed the role of police. To have like policemen meditating, and guards in India meditating amongst the prisoners, and they kind of kiss each other's feet in order, in respect. And normally they were like beating each other. So kind of that, I was so blessed to see that what is actually possible, and learn from her how her mind was operating by making the documentary about her.
That's incredible. What's the documentary called for people watching and for myself?
It's called In Gandhi's Footsteps.
In Gandhi's Footsteps.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, that's incredible. It really is. And it just shows you the difference between kind of like fear and love, doesn't it? Pre-2020, well, for me anyway, was kind of, and I guess other people, it was all about kind of, you know, being in this kind of fear paradigm. And I feel that we're kind of, as you say, we're kind of switching in and out of this fear / love paradigm collectively. I'd love nothing more for us to move forward in the love paradigm. But yeah, we're being conditioned in a way to remain in the fear based.
But we need to address the fear. We need to address the darkness. We need to go into it. But I think a little bit like maybe what the spiritual community and which we look at in Facebook and stuff, and where it's easy that the light workers and the spiritual one is judging the other ones and people in power. And then it's like, but it's also the people in power need to see that they actually doing a lot of harm as well with this, because they are afraid. They are afraid of, and I totally understand them, and I'm happy I'm not in their shoes. So in one way, who am I to judge? But if I was their advisor, it's like to really, okay, what is fear-based and what is kind of makes sense, and how, and just not taking on the short term, but a little bit on longer term, the consequences of what we are actually doing now. Because we can't solve, and that was the thesis about, we can't solve, and what Albert Einstein said, we can't solve the problems we had now with the same level of consciousness that created them.
Yes.
And in order, and that's the journey process, in order to kind of come through, we need to face the fear, we need to face the death of this paradigm, and bring and more courageous people stepping up, speaking from another paradigm. But when we do, a lot of people will also starting to judge us for being naive, being not taking care. So, but all of that, so we're going through that battle in one way, which has always been there, but now this is coming to surface. And I'm sorry, and I think it's gonna be even worse before it gets better.
So it kind of seems like the, you know, the people in government, like the actual, the human beings like you and like me, in government, they actually need to meet themselves too at a deeper level. So they actually need, you know, to go on, it seems like they need to go on a healing journey themselves. It's like a, it's a collective, it's a collective thing, isn't it? Yeah, so that's super powerful. I'd really love to hear more about your meeting with the Dalai Lama.
On
a different tangent, but I'd love to hear a bit more about that.
I was blessed to meet him in 2007, I think. No, to start in 2008. So it was in the documentary theme. I have a kind of a big heart for the Tibetans, because I feel like a lot of the spiritual things are coming from their tradition, and they have that to claim their inner power. So they, but my friend Øystein, which I made this first documentary with, he was kind of in relationship with, he had been working for Dalai Lama for some time. And he also helped the Tibetans of empowering projects. And then it came to 2007, and we knew that this is a key point for the Tibetans to speak up around human rights issues, freedom of press, and all of that. So, and we knew Norwegian radio trying to broadcast news into Tibet, unbiased news and Tibetan news and stuff like that, but the Chinese trying to spam it. So in that process, we saw like, okay, there is gonna be an uprising coming, and we found some youth organizations, and we followed them on a journey to kind of go home and march back to Tibet, like in a Gandhi's footsteps in one way as well. So Gandhi was still there, or he's still there. So, but then when we made that documentary, we and I was even arrested in India, had one night in the prison in India, but it went well. But during those period, we also managed to get an interview with Dalai Lama, he was a. It's amazing to see these Tibetans, because they are in powerful positions, but they are still very, very flexible and very happy beings, and they can be in the moment. So I feel like they are free. So like Dalai Lama, after the interview, we had CNN, BBC, and other broadcasters on the waiting to have an interview, because all the world press was waiting to interview him. And he said, come, let's go in the garden. And and he grabbed our hands, and we have to take a picture. It's so nice, you know, in his funny, amazing style. So, I was blessed by my wild man, which is Dalai Lama. So,
do you think having a Dalai Lama in, like, for Europe or for the UK, would that kind of structure work, do you think? In, like, I don't know, maybe not instead of governments, but like, do you think having that type of figure, like over in the sort of Europe, do you think that would like work?
I think Dalai Lama is coming from another tradition and another, and I think we need to build on the system we have built on, because if not, it will not be accepted into the system.
Yeah.
But I think if there is a role, it's like the king and the queen, you know. If there was a wise king and the queen, but I think.
Yeah.
I think the Norwegian king is quite liked in one way, and that was in one way the role of Dalai Lama, but he was more because of his wisdom, he was picked when he was a child as well, but he was going through his education, Buddhist education. But it's a little bit the same kind of thoughts. There has also been bad Dalai Lamas during histories, or not so good Dalai Lamas. Mm-hmm. Like earlier, we have the fifth Dalai Lama was like a lot of women, and yeah. So it's like there has been, I think it's a while ago, but there is, some was good, some was not so good, and I think this one they have now is amazing. So and have a lot of wisdom and humor, but it comes from another tradition.
That's so true. So I wonder if like the UK or even the Norwegian, because that's where you're from, king and queen have access to the debt. Because you see them go off on their ventures and stuff. You see them on the news, and I wonder if they do have access to the Dalai Lama. Do you know if they do?
You mean the royal family, yeah, and stuff?
Yeah.
No, I think it's. I think now it's Dalai Lama with China is it couldn't happen publicly. So it's like, no, and that was my sad thing of making that documentary. Here we, and that was part of the documentary as well, we made it for Norwegian television, and seeing how the Norwegian government was kind of kowtowing down to the brutal crackdown in Tibet, and they're saying, and our Minister of Foreign Affairs at that time is like, we're standing for human rights and we have to stand up for it, but then we're gonna make an interview with him and let him say, what do you think about the Tibetan issue and stuff? And then he was kind of just silent, and he tried to hide away. He didn't dare to speak it, because he knew if he spoke, then China would take away the trade agreement which was there, so they always have that. And so the more, and that this is also 20 years ago or 12 years ago, but China has just been growing more in power, and now we see, okay, US is starting to stand up for the human rights and stuff, and that's where we all need to be. And that's my scary part after being I was in prison in India, but I was also in Tibet and being followed by spies of Chinese.
Wow.
And they were like, really, that was, they called on our phones, but now the, what do you call it in English? The way they can control the population, we couldn't do the same as we did in 2007, 2008. Because today they have so much better equipment, so you can't really speak up. So so the totalitarian regime is just tightening in more and more. And that's what we feel now in the lockdown and stuff. It's like, that's the scary part. It's like, are we going too far with the lockdown? And are we losing our rights? So this was... I experienced this in China, and now I see like, okay, China is coming here in Norway as well, or in UK and around the world. And I'm a little bit scared of that development.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like your life is a real life, like movie, you know, it's something that you'd watch. It's kind of playing out every day kind of thing. You know, you've had spies after you, you've been in jail, and in India for a night. How was that experience being in the jail?
it was a peak experience in one way, because again, if you stand up for your values and what you really believe is true. So here I'm standing up for the Human Rights Declaration that foreign or people from like Tibetan, they can walk back home and they will be treated as citizens. Mm-hmm. And the Chinese are saying, yes, there's no problem of coming back. We welcome them back. And I'm standing here and just going to witness this process, what's going on. I'm standing with freedom of press with my camera. I believe in that. I'm fully, I don't feel like I've done anything wrong. I have a visa. I'm just here as a witness. Mm. And then they, because the things was getting a little bit more turbulent, and they cracked down, and before they cracked down, they took me and put me in jail. And then I was like, who the fuck are you doing this? I was kind of furious. So, and I was sitting in the meditation, in the cell, and I was chanting and I was singing and I was like, I was on fire, you know?
Well done. Well done.
And then I just wanted to finish the story. It was quite funny. And then I went into the next day, because the beauty of India is democracy. Mm. So think, and that's why it's working, because you have a democracy, it's allowed to speak up. That's why I felt safe. And I've already been in Indian prison, so I was not afraid. And I said, like, okay, I know the head of the prison system. I can call her. And so I was kind of giving them a little bit, and like, you better treat me nice. And then I came out in the garden the next morning, and there was a police car full of policemen in there. And then they roll down the window at that time, roll down the window, and then say, hello, sir. Hello, sir. Are you married? And I shook my head, no. I think you should go home and marry.
That's such a good story. Thanks for sharing that. That's epic. What was that? Were you getting fed well? Like, were you eating dal in the prisons?
What do you mean?
Were you eating the Indian cuisine in the prisons, like the dal?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. And then you brought through your wild man with the singing, the chanting and stuff. So let's talk a little bit more about your, like, the wild man program. I'd love to hear a bit more about that, what it is and kind of what it does. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, so I bring together like 20 years, 25 years of my spiritual practice together in a program. Mm-hmm. And it's starting with, but I feel like maybe I can talk a little bit more about my journey. Mm. So, just briefly, and then I come into it so that you have an understanding of what's there.
Please.
Yeah, so I did a journey and found my essence, and I went into then to satsang and sitting in silence, which is also part of the wild man. It's kind of knowing who am I really? Who am I really? This is week four in the wild man, and like inquiry into that. And really, yeah, finding out who I am. So I was doing that for 7 years, actually, with some deeper inquiries and meditation while I was making these films and stuff. But then how to bring that into the world, that was difficult. And especially around sexuality for me. It's like I felt there is a mismatch between my sexuality. Sometimes I watched porn, sometimes I was wanking off, and I felt like, okay, I'm getting weaker of doing this. There is something which is not true to this. Mm. So I So I was like furious, like to my guru at that time. I was like, what to do with this fucking sexual energy? <It's> like, and I was frustrated. And it took me quite a more years before I like went, okay, I'm ready for Tantra, because I had some sexual trauma, some sexual pain and stuff I needed to work on. So then I went head on to the Tantra field, and and I was taking 50, 60 workshops, and I was a junkie full on there too. But then I learned how to conserve my sexual energy. So that is kind of, and when I started to hold and not ejaculate and learning to circulate it through my body, I got so much more power, and a lot of my pain in my body, a lot of stuff was kind of, things were coming to surface, but also things left. And I felt like, okay, now I'm really growing. Before I felt like, okay, I'm going one step forward, two steps back, three steps forward. And like, but then like, this is rocket fuel. I use that for growth. And that was, and then I did that with some workouts and stuff, because I wanted to be also stronger in a relationship, because I had some difficulties around relationships, how to be, stay strong in a relationship. And if you have sex, especially in the beginning, 2-3 times a day almost, and if I ejaculate each time, I am losing my power. I feel weak. And then we have less and less sex and less intimacy. And then sooner or later, it's like I broke up. I feel like, okay, this is not taking me in the direction I want. So that was, that's why my original journey, why I went to Tantra. And that is what I've started with in the Wild Men program, is learning men how to conserve their sexual energy, doing a morning practice and leaving porn addiction and other kind of addictions to see if you can kind of, can you stay with yourself without acting out these things? And it's a really powerful process.
Super powerful. And you mentioned the microcosmic orbit. That's a powerful thing as well to experience. I experienced that like a month ago or so, maybe 2 months ago or so. And it's just like you just wake up to something completely different. You're just like, I didn't even know that was like possible. And then you try to explain it to someone who hadn't experienced it. You're just like, oh, you're chatting a load of crap kind of thing. But I guess this is what you do on your Wildman program. You really help people. Is it men specifically? Is it?
It has been only men for 4 years. Now I've been open, or the last year I've been opening also for women. I want to do men's group and women's group and also healing together. I feel like there is really powerful to hear both perspective. So because we men, we don't want to harm the women. We just want to be too good to them. It's like, often we want to please them and we want to give them orgasms and we forget about really enjoying the ride ourselves. And the same with women. They're just, okay, I think he needs to just let me, I'm just lying there. But I'm actually not enjoying, and just to come to, or they can enjoy, but often it's like, the man is going too fast and he's coming too early, and there is it's just a friction based sex. It's not a real intimacy and a real connection.
Tantra, and that's what Tantra is all about, isn't it?
Yeah, for me, or Tantra is now a lot of sex. Tantra is much, much more, but it's often today in the Western world, it's easy to sail on that one. And it's a really powerful practice as well. So it's, but I wasn't ready for it. It took me many years before I was ready to really, really go for it.
And then I've also spotted that you did an 8-year like sex fast and like wank fast. So you kept your sexual energy for 8 years then?
I have been on the practice, 9 years now, a little bit more than 9 years. But I have ejaculated sometimes, but I haven't ejaculated now for the last 4 years.
So, how far does it go in?
I am a little bit extreme, as you hear. I get a little bit shy saying it, now I don't think about it, you know, I can have as much sex as I want. Mm. I have more or less sex every day. Mm. But I'm not ending it with the ejaculation.
Amazing.
So I can have as many orgasms as I want through the microcosmic orbit and full body orgasms. So I am enjoying that, but I'm not enjoying the five peak experience. Because I feel like I'm losing some energy afterwards. It's also a lot of discussions around this, and don't take my words on it. But try it out for a while and then see if it makes a difference. But it's, again, we need to face all our cravings and all our shit. And it's not everybody's willing to do that. Mm. But it's, I feel like it's so worth it. It's like I can live almost like a pain-free life in a daily basis because of that.
Wow. That's incredible. And I remember you did a recent post when you said that there's nothing to do, only to be. So I'd love for you just to talk about that, and just kind of share what's coming through for you.
Yeah, maybe I think I take a story there as well. So I put it in a reference. So after the Tantra, I was going through another down process. Me and my partner was on the way of separating. And I was kind of looking for guidance, and I'm looking for means. How can we come together? How can we heal? And how can we come back into union again and love again and respect, and that we're seeing each other's perspective in a more profound way. And I clean up my shit, and hopefully she's willing, or she's being seen what she needs to see. So I felt that urge. Suddenly the ayahuasca was coming to me, which is medicine from Peru or from South America, where it's two different plants. And if you eat one of them or drink one of them separate, it's nothing happened. But when you bring them together, the DMT, which is in the plant, and the one plant is kind of so that can go through the stomach without the DMT is being lost. So it's possible to have like a shamanic experience. First message came to me was like, I have to leave my Tantra school and I need to go deeper on my journey. And it says like, and then I have to be true to my heart. Because suddenly now with the Tantra, I was so much about sex and focusing way too much on sex. So I was in a teacher and it was like, no, I can't be in this school with this teacher anymore. I felt like something was wrong. So I said like, okay, I need to find what is truth for me. So I started to do more ayahuasca and I went to Peru and went on a huge cleansing there for 10 weeks. And was a lot of pain and a lot of ego death. But there came like, as long as I am true to my heart and my soul, I am loved and I am taken care of. So how can I live from a place of love and devotion and silence? I'm still in the process of that. I'm still a little bit workaholic, but slowly it's going going down.
Wow, that's incredible. That's incredible. Thanks so much for being on, Paul. It's been such a pleasure to have you on and to jam and to just to for me to experience, and everyone who's going to listen as well, just to experience you and just your journey and just like the movie that's playing out. It's just like, to me, you live such a super like exciting life, and you know, you're really here to, from my perspective, to live your soul's like mission, soul's calling. And I think that's very much, that's just so, it's so honoring just to see, mm-hmm. and just to be in your presence. And I finished the episode with three questions. So I've got three little questions, a bit shorter than the ones we've done before.
Can I just, before you talk that, and I, yeah. my purpose with the wild man as well is for each one to become sovereign in their own being.
Yes.
In with their body, with their sexuality, in their relationship, in their life purpose. How can I live a sovereign life? Mm. And trust my own being, because this is not my story, it's just how I've been going, but each one of us have all the answers we are waiting for is inside of them. And yeah. we all have an amazing story to tell. And that's the beauty of making documentary. We have to, if you dive really deeply into some people's story, life, there mm. is some interesting things if you just look carefully enough. And that's to be that curious mm. is what I invite people to become.
And to have that support as well, the support, and I guess feeling your heart and feeling other people's hearts that are kind of on the journey with you. It's you can't do it on your own. It's impossible. Doing the lone wolf thing. How can people join your program then? How can people find you?
Yeah, they if it feels like they're calling to their heart, it's just to go to the wildmanprogram.com and there you see the Wildman program, and then you can book a call with me, and then I will see if you have, we're finding the right, if this is the right program for you, and we are a right match to go on this journey together.
That sounds great. Who's the first question? Who's the most inspirational person you've kind of been with, like been in presence with?
It's a difficult one.
I can name a few.
Yeah, so one was what I mentioned, Kiran Bedi and Dalai Lama, which we have mentioned. But I also want to mention one African woman, which we haven't made a documentary, it's not finished, or like we had problems with the funding on it. Mm-hmm. But she's born in, was in Burundi. And she saw 72 of her closest friends and family being killed in front of her.
Bloody hell.
Cut off the head and were thrown a head into her lap. And she said, "This will never, never happen again. I want to be a testament that this will not happen." So she said, "I need to raise..." First, she had to take care of a couple of children of her aunt, because she died at that moment. So she started to take care of her children, and then she took care of around 20 to 30,000 children, helping them with orphanage and supporting them to get a life and finding back to parents or families. And she has been kind of from going from such a dark space to empowering people, taking people from prisons, making a hospital in Burundi, doing everything and building up, using 20, 30 years of that, her life, to build it up. And then she had to leave it because she came on the death list of the president. And she just leave it and just continue with the people in Rwanda when they had to flee. So such an amazing woman. Is she's yeah, I think she's maybe the strongest story, and she's been threatened on her life many times, but still smiling, happy, singing, and going also with the full power and talking the truth.
Hopefully she's received all sorts of, you know, recognition and medals and stuff for her work.
Yeah, she has got, last year's she got some more recognitions.
Stuff, wow. Much respect to her. Okay, and second question, when do you think the economy is going to crash? What's your prediction?
I think I am not the one to predict it. It's I would I am not so good. I would say for 20 years ago, but but it's, we are going towards the end game now. Because the only reason why we don't crash is that we print endless of money. Yeah. And this is a crime in one way. If you and me were, it's like I say that this is like George Floyd was killed because it was $20 he had, was accused for maybe having a false, and then he was killed by some policemen. But if you look at the Federal Reserve, they are printing billions of dollars out of thin air, out of nothing. Banks are creating. So the whole system is corrupt.
Yeah.
So it is, but when people are, if enough people waking up to saying this, it will crash. It will crash anyhow, because all fiat currencies have gone to zero in history. And there's had been like 150, 60, many currencies, and all fall down because the value of the money becomes nothing. Because and this printing of money is on the way out, and with COVID it just speed up the process. But all governments are in debt, more or less. All governments spending more money than they using. There are a few countries which are not, but Norway has some money, but a lot of that money is probably gone soon as well. Yeah, I think we are in the last years. So I will think 3 years, 5 years max, and maybe even sooner.
Wow. Gosh, this kind of seems like it's time just for a completely new system and integration of a new system. And I guess people are kind of waking up to that now, but just with the whole corona stuff as well, you know, the whole like face masks and, you know, like shutting playgrounds, shutting like saunas where people like bathe, and, you know, kids aren't allowed to play. It's just like, what? But I mean, this isn't humane. This literally isn't like humane. So I guess people are hopefully going to start to listen, you know, within themselves rather than, you know, sort of governments and that kind of thing.
That's why we need to be sovereign again.
Yes.
We need the more, but it's not easy. I would like to have a government. I'm not against government, but we can't always rely on the government. They're doing good in one way. They're doing the best they can, and they want to help, but they don't see what they are doing also in the long run. They're doing good in the short run maybe, but the long effect of it. And we have to face each one of us. We're going to die one day.
Yeah.
And we are afraid of death. Mm. But we need to face that death, each one of us.
Yeah.
And the more we do, we're waking up to the reality that I am more than my money, I'm more. And that's, each one of us has to face that fear of survival.
Mm.
If not, we are killing the planet. That's why the environmental crisis is coming. We are overusing, and we are not living in harmony with ourselves, and we're not living in harmony with nature.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one really good thing that's happening at the moment. Like, nature is just given a chance just to breathe and just to reset. And, you know, the planet's breathing again. I guess that's a massive positive. I've got one last question for you. So one practice, one sort of daily thing. I'm not really talking about food or water. I'm talking about like a practice that you do every day that you couldn't, or you wouldn't want to live without.
Yeah, I have my wild man workout. So that's what I am, but I'm developing it. It's a dynamic yoga, and I play some cool music, dancing, doing yoga, doing breath work, qigong, and like doing the best things I like and what my body likes, so I can prime my body for the day, and so I can wake up and being happy and ready to do what I want to do today. Because often in the morning I feel tired or negative or challenges, but after that I'm ready.
Anything. And was it an hour generally, about an hour?
I have 20 minutes, I have a 30 minutes, and I have a 60 minute version, and it's possible to change it as well. But people can download that. I give that for free. So it's like a half an hour, 1 hour version of it, which I give for free. And you can go on a 7-day challenge for free to try it out for 7 days and see if you like it too.
I think you're going to have a lot of people the next few years rushing to do this Wellman program, it seems like. So thanks very much, brother, for coming on. It's again such a pleasure, and yeah, we hope to speak again soon at some point.
Yeah, thank you for your curiosity and your good questions.
Yeah, no worries. All right.
All right.